The second case for oral argument this morning is Prunty Construction versus the City of Canastota for the appellant. Prunty Construction is Mr. Ronald Schmidt, attorney from Rapid City. And for the appellee, City of Canastota, is Mr. Timothy Bjorkman, an attorney from Bridgewater. Mr. Schmidt, you may proceed, sir.
Morning.
Please, the court. This case essentially involves whether the contract in question was a unit priced or lump sum contract. And I'd like to say that the unit priced contract actually evolved from underground construction. And the unit priced contract in construction is very beneficial to the owner as well as to the contractor. The reason it's beneficial to the owner is that the units are specifically priced and the work identified by the engineer. He just simply doesn't know, and nobody knows, how much work's going to ultimately be required in this underground situation of a water line or a sewer line, and that's what we're talking about.
And this is consistent with state bid laws? Unit price contracts.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
And the unit bid contract is beneficial to the owner here, the city, for this reason, because if you don't have the units identified to price separately and you have to bid at lump sum, the contractor, not knowing what will be encountered, is going to bid much higher because of the contingencies. So the unit price contract actually takes the risk out of the bidding. Now, when the contractor fills in the bid form, there are identified units. There's simply estimated or approximated quantities of units and a blank. And so what the contractor does is fill in the actual price for that specific unit of work. And in this case, there are 147 separate units. So then all of the bidders' tabs are totaled based on the estimated quantities. And if you look at the bid form here, it says gross total of the unit prices. And then the owner can compare apples to apples for purposes of awarding the contract. But after the award is made, the contractor then begins work, and the engineer has the right under section 2.3 in this contract to either increase or decrease the units of work on the specific unit being worked on, because depending on the conditions encountered. And for example, in this instance, many of the units, if you look at change order number 2, based on the final measurements, there was actually a reduction in many of those units totaling $20,000 to the benefit of the city. Other units were increased by about $77,000, with the net difference being the $58,000 that is owed the contractor.
Mr. Schmidt,
if it were a lump, I'm sorry, yeah, Your Honor.
If I can interrupt you, and the you know, I know that the argument here is between the unit price or whether it's lump sum. Yet when I read the correspondence or the decision of the lower court, I don't know, did he ever reach that that issue or that determination? He talks about both the unit price and the lump sum, and basically, though, relies upon the provision that requires the work to stop to support the decision.
In my opinion, the court held it was a lump sum contract, but interestingly, the way the court ruled, by holding it's a lump sum contract and that you have to have a change order prior to every change, for example, there are literally hundreds and hundreds of changes that are made constantly and consistently, so you would have to, before you, for example, shortened a pipe a foot or lengthened a pipe a foot, you'd have to stop, get a change order for that specific change, come back, start working, and if you went 2 more feet and found another pipe that needed to be extended, you'd have to stop, and it takes a day or two to get a change order put together. It has to go through the engineer, it has to go to the city, it has to go to the contractor.
But there are provisions in there that do require work to stop.
Absolutely.
And was that is it your opinion that the lower court made the determination that this was one of those occasions, that the final change order really was a material change that needed, that the work needed to stop?
It would be my understanding of reading and reading the lower court's decision that the lower court felt that this work, all of this work, all of these changes, pluses and minuses, was extra work. Under Section 17 of the contract, and extra work, by definition, is work that's not anticipated at the time you enter into the contract. It's surprising. You don't know it's there. But if you look at the change order, every single change in this instance was related to a specific bid item. So the conditions were anticipated, we just didn't know how many. And that's the beauty of a contract of this nature, is that the contractor only gets paid for what work he or she actually does.
Is it a disputed fact that should have actually gone to a jury or a fact finder whether or not this was unanticipated?
I think that, Your Honor, under the facts that are in the record from the affidavits, for example, that the only affidavit, Mr. Prunty put in an affidavit saying this was not unforeseen, not unanticipated. The city's affidavit said, well, we didn't get notice of any work. So I think the undisputed facts are that this was not extra work by definition as a matter of law, and that the lower court should be reversed. And in fact, if the court finds that this wasn't, as a matter of law, a unit price contract, then Prunty should be entitled to summary judgment as a matter of law on that issue.
To follow up on that, the trial court, I didn't see any findings whether each of these items were or were not unanticipated subsurface conditions.
I think it's implied, Your Honor, implied by the very fact that he found it was a lump sum contract, and by definition, if it were a lump sum contract, you cannot modify the contract price without a change order one penny up or down. Therefore, I think that has to be implied.
But even if it's a unit contract, a change order was required for unanticipated subsurface conditions.
True, absolutely.
And there's no finding of fact as to whether each of these items is at issue today.
That's true, not item by item. There wasn't.
So but how do we know what to do with the $50,000? The various items that are included within that.
I think, Your Honor, if you look at the change order, final number 2, it's based on the final measurements made by the city's own engineer, and there's a specific quantity of the change up or down, and many of them go down to the benefit of the city, and that in and of itself shows that those were anticipated items because they're contract unit bid items. Everybody anticipated those specific items. They just didn't know how many would be there. Therefore, I don't think just from that finding alone it could be unanticipated, because all of the items that are deducted or increased are in fact anticipated bid items for which a unit price was firm in the contract. That's the beauty of the unit bid contract, is that the price for each unit is firm. That price can never be changed except with a change order. Now, if you wanted to change a unit price, you'd have to have a change order. But under 2.1 and 2.3, where the quantities are up or down, the city reserves the right under 2.3 to increase or decrease the quantities. And then in 2.1, it says that there will be a change order based on the final measurements of the engineer. And you can't have a final you can't do a final measurement if there's still work to be done. So all the work is done. The contract is completely executed. There have been several partial pay estimates throughout the project, all of which, by the way, as the record shows, were based on the unit price form. There's a lump sum form and unit price form. The city approved 7 partial pay estimates on a unit bid price format in the form prior to this final change order. We had alleged waiver and estoppel. The court never got to it, but we think that even on that ground, they've admitted that it's a unit bid contract because they've signed 7 pay estimates on that form.
Now, there was a prior change order.
Yes, Your Honor.
There was one, at least. What made that unique?
That was a subsurface site condition where the soils were more saturated than anticipated, and they had a, it was not an anticipated condition. There's a change order about $20,000. And that was, in fact, a bona fide reason for a change order, and they did it, and they used it. But that brings an interesting fact. The city was actually warned by their engineer a month or so before the work was done that there was going to be an overrun because of that change order. And I'd cite the court to Monty Miller, the city engineer's testimony, pages 32 to 34. And he actually warned them there's going to be an overrun because of this extra, this $20,000 change order, and we can avoid any problem if you'd be willing to eliminate paving the surface of a street. Then we won't have a problem. The city, as Mr. Miller states, said, no, we want that surface, and we're going ahead. So they knew there'd be an overrun, and they actually chose to not avoid it. They had that opportunity.
You know, it seems to me that that your client made, you know, at least four major mistakes in this case, and now is coming in and asking us to reverse the circuit court on their conclusion that was not a lump sum, but it was a unit price deal. And in my mind, the first major mistake was that they deal with this all the time. The city only deals with it once, maybe every 10 years or whenever sewer and water needs to be replaced. So it would seem to me that they ought to make clear to the city that it's a unit price contract if they're claiming it is, rather than a lump sum contract. Then they come along during the course of the contract, and when it gets up to the what the city thought was the final billing, they come in with an estimate that comes up to exactly the estimated, quote, lump sum price that was stated in the beginning, and then come along later with what they call as a change order. And it's really not a change order, it's just a unit price order, if according to your client now, or your position that you're expressing. And at this point, the city was already expecting that they were all completely paid for this thing. So it's to me, it's clearly a problem created more by your client than by the city. And then fourth, it seemed to me that when they came in with this final change order, it was more like a lump sum contract than a unit price contract. It really wasn't a change order. It's under a unit price, it should just be an order for the rest of the money based on units. So considering these four things, and maybe you don't agree that that they are major mistakes or that they are the fault of Prunty, but they seem to be very misleading to me, and I can see where the trial court would reach the conclusion that he did in view of those in view of the actions of your own client.
May I respond, Your Honor?
Absolutely.
In the inverse order, that to the extent they might claim surprise, I've already pointed out that they were warned by their own engineer there probably would be an overrun, and if they didn't pave the street, they'd cover it. They chose, no, we want that street paved. So this is no surprise. Secondly, as to the change order point you make, if you look at section 2.1, it defines three specific types of change orders. And the last one is this final change order based on the final measurements of the engineer after all the work's completed. And it says it's by change orders. It may not be the right word to use, and I'm not real happy with some of the language in the contract for that matter, but it was a change order properly presented. The third, the first point you made, the city, as to the unit price contract, or my client having some duty to say that this is a unit price contract, The city drew the contract. Their engineer, Mr. Sayer, actually prepared all the bidding proposal, all of the documents, submitted them out, and he testified time after time, not only was this a unit bid contract, but that he'd never, ever seen a lump sum contract used on an underground utility project in his career. And the third point, Your Honor, is that this city, if you look at the facts here, had two previous, very recent previous unit bid contracts administered by the same city engineer, Sayer, as unit bid contracts, and they were administered and paid as unit bid contracts, and they were identical to this contract. So to say that they weren't aware of unit bid price or were surprised by the change order isn't fair. They knew it was in a unit bid price. They had two just very recent previous projects, and they drew the contract.
The only point I think you didn't address is the point of preparing an estimate came out at exactly what the lump sum price was. Do you have anything else to say on that?
You're saying that that with the change order, the $20,000 change order, and with this proposed final change order, it would come out exactly what?
No, at one time, didn't the city pay the $952,000 or something based on a request by Prenti?
No, Your Honor. They just paid that, saying that was a lump sum and that's all we're paying in. They refused to sign the change order. But if you look at the change order and you take the original contract amount, you add the $20,000, you deduct the $20,000 that they were given credit on that final change order for the adjustments downwards, and then add the $75,000, that there's a net of $58,000 due and owing, and they refused to pay it, taking the position that it was a lump sum contract, which we think is error. So I don't believe Prunty did anything wrong. They did what they, in fact, Prunty was one of the contractors on the previous unit bid contract administered by Sayer for this very city of Canastota.
And did both of those prior ones go over the estimated amount?
One went over and one went under. And that's the other thing.
And that's in the record.
Yes, Your Honor. And that's the other thing. If we wouldn't be here if all the adjustments had been downwards, and if this is a lump sum contract and they went downward, then Prunty should be able to sue the city for the one they did, I think it was one they did, where they were cut back because the final measurements of the engineer actually reduced the contract. See, again, that's the beauty of a unit price contract. The contractor only gets paid for the work he or she actually does. And if there is units that are reduced, that's to the benefit of the city. And this decision, if left to stand, would really disrupt municipal utility, county utility contracting, governmental utility contracting in South Dakota. And the case law, we believe, shows that where the quantities are approximated or estimated, and where the units are priced separately, that is a unit price contract. And we cited three specific cases to that effect. And if it were a lump sum, there wouldn't be any units. There would just be a total dollar amount. And the next thing, if you look at the bid sheet here, it says you add up the gross of the unit prices, and then underneath there's an alternate. And the alternate is for a specific item, for a specific factory-built steel meter control vault, and that says lump sum. And then there's a second alternate with a modified version of this specific item, and that says lump sum. But up under where you total the gross amount of the unit prices that are based on estimated quantities, it just says gross sum bid. And then you have to go to the specifications to see that the final change order.
We're almost out of time, and I need to find out why Prunty Construction changed its position on the unanticipated subsurface conditions. It looked to me like early on they were contending it was, and now they're saying it's not.
No, Your Honor, I unfortunately, and I think that's even Monty Miller in his deposition, we covered that. The term subsurface site condition is used loosely, and unfortunately, I think I may have even used it improperly at the very beginning of the case in that letter. But there's an anticipated subsurface site condition and an unanticipated, and technically they're all unanticipated, which is why you use a unit bid contract in this instance. But then if there's extra work or unforeseen work that's unusual and different from anything in the items in the contract, then you got to go, that's extra work as opposed to additional work. And the case law makes that clarification. So anyway, my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you. Excuse me.
Mr. Bjorkman, you have 20 minutes.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of the Court, may it please the Court, Counsel. Starting with the last item first, Mr. Schmidt in his letter that he referred to specifically did characterize this as an unanticipated subsurface site condition encountered as annotated in the engineer's final payment estimate. That's at date stamp 0016 of the appendix of my brief. Your Honors, this was a lump sum contract. Every aspect of the contract breathes lump sum. The sole area, the sole potential provision that could say anything else would be in the agreement itself, and the agreement is just silent with any language indicating that it was anything other than a lump sum.
Are you saying it's ambiguous when you say it's silent?
No, I'm saying that every aspect of it, Your Honor, says that it's a lump sum contract, and there's nothing to support the claim that it's unit price.
How about the fact that your own engineer who drafted it doesn't support that position? At least that's what your opponent says.
Yes, Your Honor. The engineer used the term unit price, but interestingly, he proposed the change orders. And so the unit price language that he's referring to, I don't believe is the same unit price that the court and the law give a legal significance to. The contract undisputably has unit prices for items. The reason for that was partially alluded to, and it's obvious. SDCL 518.18.3 says that you don't have to go out and rebid a project if the parties agree to do some extra work that was unanticipated at the beginning of the contract, and if it's within the range of price that that statute permits. So the utility, the usefulness of unit prices being broken down within a contract's lump sum is so that the parties don't have to stop, delay the project to rebid for some work that needs to be done that wasn't anticipated.
Under that theory, then, were you finished with
yes,
that?
Yes, Your
Honor. Under that theory, then, with the prior change order that was approved, are you then saying that the city owes the lump sum that was in the contract, the 900 and some thousand, plus the additional change order amount of 20 some thousand, then, and they, which that has not been paid, isn't that
no, correct? That's incorrect, Your Honor. That one change order of $22,000 has been paid also, and that'll appear in the proposed change order that Mr. Miller filled out. It shows what the, and it refers to contract price, original contract price, $925,000, change order, $22,000, and now the second proposed change order, which was then, I think, $54,000 as proposed.
So the lump sum amount then is, the city's actually paid them more than the lump sum amount?
The city paid the original lump sum amount, Your Honor, of $925,000 plus the $22,000 change order, which was approved prior to the work being done on that change order. And briefly, while we're on that, council mentioned two prior projects that this engineer had been involved with, but we can't leave it at that. there were two prior projects, but to say that those were unit price and that everybody knew it is simply wrong. The first project came in over the amount, as Mr. Schmidt told us. What he didn't mention is that's because there was a change order signed prior to the work being done in that case too, and Mr. Miller testified to that, and that's in his deposition. So it went over the original contract amount, but not over the contract amount with change order. The second contract came in under, but again, we didn't hear the real reason. It came in under because there was a penalty, a timeliness penalty, and so that lowered the amount. Otherwise, both of those would have been at the original contract price. That supports the city's position rather than Prunty's.
Which one of those was with Prunty or were both of them?
Justice Sabers, I can't tell you off the top of my head. I think it may be in Mr. Miller's deposition, but I hesitate to say which.
Okay.
But you're I think, excuse me.
Go ahead and finish your answer, Ian.
Wasn't it the first one? I want to think it was the first one.
Of those two prior contracts, I'm just not confident, but I think the record will reveal it. I'm sorry.
So you're saying that the two prior contracts were both one fixed cost?
Yes, Your Honor.
Were they the same though, the same type of language?
The record doesn't reveal that.
Okay.
But I will say that these are RUS approved contracts, and RUS is the one who requires most of this language. This language is there to protect the owner, in this case the city, and RUS. That's why the change order, Prunty would like us to think that that language in general supplemental general condition 2.1 and 2.2 somehow calls for a change order after all the work is done. Well, let's just stop on that a minute. First of all, it's in the entire basis of its argument is mutually inconsistent, because it's been arguing that this was a unit price contract. And as I think was pointed out earlier, you don't have change orders in unit price contracts. But they're saying it's a unit price contract and supplemental general condition 2 says that we can change this after the fact, that we can have a change order after the fact.
Don't you need change orders to change the number of units on a unit price contract?
Yes.
Okay.
The number of units?
Yeah.
No. No.
If the estimate says you're going to use 100 widgets and you need to use 110, how do you convince the city it's got to pay for the additional 10 widgets without a change order?
The idea is they're saying in a unit price contract, a purely unit price contract, Your Honor, that we think it's about 500 feet of pipe we need. If it turns out to be 525, you pay for 525. There's no change order. If it's 475, you pay for 475. The fact is the city paid dollar for dollar the contract price at all points. Now, Mr. Schmidt has argued repeatedly that Miller's own partial pay estimates are the ones used for unit price contracts. That's just not true. If you look at Mr. Schmidt's own affidavit, it's settled record 88. Partial pay estimate signed by Paul Korn, Sayer Associates, contractor Prunty, signed by Prunty, E. Knoll. And it says right on it, contract change order summary, that has a category for that every time a partial pay estimate is made. That's not for a unit price bidding. It says original contract, $925,000 and some change. Change order, at that time there hadn't been any. And then work completed and how much it was paid. And that's why I'm point out that I think the engineer was confused as to the legal significance of a unit price contract. He's talking about, yes, the thing is broken out into unit prices, and as you go along, you pay based on how many unit prices have been used to that point. And you determine project completion based on that percentage. In fact, if you look at any of several places along the way, there will be a listing by the engineer for all the items installed that pay period. And it says right at the very top of it, contract amount, $925,000. Now, would that be on there if this was a unit price contract?
You say that the city has paid for every unit installed. Is that a correct statement of what you said?
What I'm not sure what I said, Your Honor. What I meant to say, or what's accurate, is the city has paid for the entire original contract price, $925,000, plus the signed change order amount of $22,000.
Right. But that's different then. See, if the city has paid for every unit installed, in other words, you take measurements and you take it times the number, the unit price, then the issue would be how many units were installed rather than whether or not the contract is unit price or, in other words, if I had understood that right, then you would have been saying that even if he wins on unit price, it's all fully paid for, but you're not saying that.
No, I'm saying that the city paid exactly what it contracted to pay under the two agreements it signed, the original agreement and the change order amendment.
Okay. All right.
The language of the contract has been referred to different times, and this part of the contract saying agreement and the price probably needs more clarification than it's gotten till now. There was a reference that Noel, it says, or as shown in the bid schedule. But that's illuminated when you look at the signed a copy of the signed agreement that has the blanks filled in. Now that signed agreement doesn't appear in Prunty's documents that I myself quoted from at times, I believe, but it does appear in Laurel Siebert affidavit, settled record 294. The agreement has the blanks filled in, and it clarifies exactly the purchase price, $925,587.77, and then it says the blank, it goes on after the blank, or as shown in the bid schedule, and underneath it, it says bid alternate two.
Well, the one I'm looking at here is a copy of it. Is the original of this in here?
Yes, that's at settled record 294, Your Honor.
That's what I'm looking at, but this one that I'm looking at is a copy. But even so...
Oh, no, it has the blanks filled in, though?
Yes, it has the blanks filled in, but it's a copy. It's
yes.
Okay.
That's all there is.
There's the... I'm looking at the first line that you say has the lump sum. It's $925,587.77. Underneath that line, there's, in parentheses, bid alternate number two. Then I'm also looking at it, and it says or, and that is underlined, as shown in the bid schedule, and that is underlined. So that was added. Now, how do you interpret that? Because I know the bid alternate number two is that one on the bid that's the steel, whatever that was that Mr. Schmidt referred to, some steel unit. And that's bid alternate number two. That's in parentheses under your lump sum. But then purposely somebody has underlined or and shown in the bid schedule.
Yeah, and that's a
so
copy.
So I would interpret that to say that obviously the bid schedule had something to do with this contract.
That was a copy that I think in the litigation got handled. Somebody was just, it might even have been me who added that because that's not in the original contract, and which isn't a part of the record, but it's in my hand.
What isn't part of the original?
Well, the original contract is not part of the record. A copy is what you're looking at there, mm-hmm. A copy of
the original contract in your hand.
I'm holding one of the, I think there were three signed originals, Your Honor.
Well, is the original, is or and shown in the bid schedule underlined?
No.
Okay. What about bid alternate number two underneath the lump sum amount? Is that in the original?
No. And I don't know if the court would like that supplement. I apologize.
I think that would be helpful.
Why don't you take it to her to let her make the comparison?
Okay, bid alternate number two is on there, though.
Yes.
That's the parentheses part. All right, thank you.
And then if you look at the notice of bid, or bid form rather, that Mr. Schmidt had relied on so heavily, bid alternate two, and underneath that it says for the lump sum of blank dollars. And just like above that, it says total gross sum bid for project. See, these are not unit prices. Every case that Mr. Schmidt has cited or that Amicus cited that supported a unit price argument had language specifically in the contract that says payment will be made based on unit prices. If you were going to draw a contract with unit prices, that's what you'd say. This contract doesn't say that. And I'm not privy to how contracts got put together, but my speculation, and I think it's based on good grounds, is, again, the whole idea of having unit prices set out separately is in the event that something does come up that's unforeseen, such as happened here, the parties don't have to go out and have a new bid made, because under the prior law, before that unit pricing was allowed to be an exception to bid laws, they would have had to do that. They would have had to stop, go out and get new bids. Here, if the parties agree that the work is necessary, they don't have to stop and go back and get new bids. They keep going as long as they sign a change order under the terms of the contract prior to the work being done.
If we were to look at this and decide that it was ambiguous, what would need to be done? Could we look at it then and look at the parole evidence that came in and determine on our own, based on the depositions of the engineer and others, what the meaning of it is? Or did we have to remand it? Or how would this court handle that? Because it was not argued at the lower court that it was ambiguous, but I think this court could probably look at it and say it was ambiguous.
It depends on what point the court would rule that it's ambiguous, Your Honor. Could you clarify which?
Well, whether it's a unit contract or a lump sum. Okay. Because you do have, I mean, the case could be made that because the bid was by unit and there are some other references to unit and there's also references to lump sum, that maybe it's an ambiguous contract. What would we need to do then? Would we remand it, or how would we do that?
If the court felt there was an ambiguity on that issue, you still can't get away from the change order issue, because the contract unambiguously requires change orders to be executed prior to the work being performed, and which are mutually agreeable to the parties. The very provision that Prunty relies on says it doesn't do away with the need for a mutually agreed upon change order. This argument about a final change order simply doesn't fly. The engineer has to measure before he lays pipe or whatever it is, and he determines what the cost is going to be, what the distance is going to be, and if it needs a change order, if he's gone over the limits of the contract, he has to stop and get the contractor together and proceed. And all the provisions of the contract that address that issue are very clear. But so on that particular ground, I don't think it changes the outcome, Your Honor. But if the court felt that it did, I fear that would probably be the wisest choice, is to remand for a more full concept of that, of the facts. I think,
look at the engineer's testimony, really the engineer locks it into a unit price contract.
He does. He uses the term. But when you look at what he actually did, Your Honor, again, I don't think he understood it in the sense that the court and the law does, because he would never have asked for a change order if it were unit price. There would be no need for that. He says he used unit pricing forms for his partial pay estimates, and he did in the sense that the partial pay estimates break out unit pricing, what was done every month, but it has a total contract price of $925,000. Unit pricing doesn't have a total contract amount, as the court knows. He makes it very clear every time he fills it out that there was original contract price, a change order, and the revised contract. That doesn't sound like unit pricing. So his conduct clarifies what he really saw and intended and understood, I think, and that is that it was a lump sum or contract, but it had individual unit pricing for items. Again, for the convenience of the parties, if they ever needed to change, they wouldn't have to go back and rebid. Unit pricing is a good thing to have within the overall project, but it's not tenable in a case like this for a municipality to simply be on the stick for an indefinite amount. And this isn't a case, so that we're clear, this is not a case where you just have an issue as to how much pipe is laid. If you actually look at the proposed change order, it sets out that there's for like, what happened is they got into an area where the ground was unstable in their judgment, and to do it right, they cut out too much, incidentally, so they went up and they hauled some 1,200 ton of aggregate gravel in and did a bunch of digging out. Most of this comes from that one set of incident and the blacktop they had to lay. There's like $43,000 of the overruns comes from that one thing. This isn't an issue of, well, we thought there was 100 foot of pipe and there's 110 foot. Totally, totally different set of facts.
Your time has expired, Mr. Bjorklund.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
On the forms that were used by the city's engineer, where did he get those forms?
I believe, Your Honor, all the forms are set out in the contract book, are required by RUS.
Okay, and is there a reference there of who prepared that form?
Of who prepared each form?
Yep.
The form itself, no, other than I think it's clear that RUS generated the forms. I think that it'll be clear as you go through those.
Do they get them from the Association of General Contractors or anything like that?
I think the federal government produces them on their own. And the reason I say that, like Notice of Award says RUS Bulletin 1780, it's a federal form that they produce.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bjork.
Thank you.
Mr. Schmidt, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. I think the most telling question was the question about paying for actual amounts installed. And the reason I say that is that the original contract amount is based on the engineer's best estimate. It's approximate at most. And the very purpose of a unit price contract is to pay the contractor for the actual numbers installed. And it's plus and minus. I mean, there are a lot of units that are reduced if you look at the change order number 2, and there are others that are increased. And so, and I believe council did say that if you pay for the actual, that the city should pay for the actual amount installed. And they should. They got the benefit of the work was done. The second thing I'd like to say is this partial pay estimate form. You are referred to page 1. Look at page 2, which is in the appendix of our brief. At the top it says typical unit price breakdown, and then down here typical lump sum price breakdown. And if you look at the partial pay estimates and you look at Mr. Miller's deposition, he said he used this unit price schedule on every one of those 7 partial pay estimates. He never used the lump sum. He used the unit price format. Lastly, look at Mr. Miller's conduct. Mr. Miller, under section 2.3, prepared a final change order based upon the final measurements of the actual quantities installed. Plus and minus. The city got a benefit of $20,000, and the contractor should be paid for the units actually installed. That's all we're asking. That's all that Penny is asking, and we believe is rightfully entitled to under this very typical unit price contract used universally throughout the United States in underground construction of this nature. It can't possibly be a lump sum contract, as I mentioned. I've seen hundreds of construction contracts, city, state, federal, and where it's lump sum, it just says one for the lump sum of. And the bid schedule does have something to do with it, Your Honor, because it says or as in the bid schedule, which is all the estimated quantities. And it also says in the bid schedule, the city reserves the right to increase or decrease. It also says in specification 2.3, the city has the absolute right to increase and decrease, and the city operates through its engineer. The city's engineer, Mr. Monty Miller of Sayre, is out there directing the contractor what to do and what not to do on behalf of the city. And if the city's representative says, you know, don't put that in, or you got to put this in, those are directives the contractor has to perform. And that's what happens on every single underground project. You have pipes that maybe aren't as long as the engineer thought, or maybe they're deteriorated, some may not need replacement. All these things happen as you proceed day by day, and it would be a travesty if the contractor had to stop every time the engineer thought that maybe something was out of the way or something needed changing, or a longer pipe or a shorter pipe. And I use that because it's the most common example. In a sewer or water main, you have a main line, and then you have a bunch of extensions either going out if it's water or coming in if it's sewer. And there are different bolts and nuts and pipes and so on, and fittings. And some need replacing, some don't. So this is how you do it in the industry. You have a unit price contract.
Do we have to make the decision then that it's ambiguous so we can take that information into account? If we really can't consider the engineer's testimony if we say that the contract's clear on its face and just look at the language of the contract itself. Only if we decide it's ambiguous can we take into consideration some of the negotiations that went ahead of it, or I think the engineer said he told the city that it was a unit price and how it was going to be bid, but at least he testified to that. Does it need to be determined?
In my opinion, this is a summary judgment proceeding, and in summary judgment, the trial court, in my opinion, same rules apply to the Supreme Court, civil rules, that you look at all the files and pleadings and records and depositions in making the determination whether or not summary judgment is appropriate. And I believe that the trial judge did that, and I believe this court has absolute right to do that de novo, if not under the rules of procedure.
Well, I understood you last time you came up here to say that there were no questions of fact and your client should win on the merits.
I said on the point of whether or not the work was anticipated or unanticipated, I said there's no dispute because Mr. Miller's change order, all of the work that's contained on the change order is all unit price work that was in the original contract. That's the sense I meant it, Your Honor.
All right.
I believe those are the main points I had. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
And I would just say, in concluding, that I would request that the court reverse the lower court and either grant summary judgment to Prunty as prayed for, or alternatively, if there are fact disputes due to ambiguities based on this court's de novo review under the rules, that it be remanded. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. The court will be in recess.